Okay, so tonight we're going to, Mitzvah Shem, be finishing up the Melacha of Tzad, and with that we will have completed Perek Oreg. After tonight, so I'm taking a two-week break just to start up this Kolel in the Five Towns, and then in Mitzvah Shem, after that, we will continue with the Perek Ve'eluk Sharm and learn about the Melachas of Kosher and Matir. Fine. Okay, so to finish off Melachas Tzad, we're going to deal with two basic issues tonight. The first issue is going to be an analysis of the Mishnah at the bottom of Kavav Amavez. And the second issue is going to be a big-time qualification to Melachas Tzad. So that's the agenda for tonight. So let's start with issue number one. The Mishnah at the bottom of Kavav Amavez tells us the following din. Let's say we have a deer runs into a house, and let's say the door to the house remains open, so the deer is not trapped. Then a person comes along, we'll call the Rishon, and the Rishon plugs up the hole. He stands, you know, he puts his body in the way of the doorway, thereby effectively trapping the deer. So the Mishnah says, he's chayef. He's doing an act of tzedah, he'll be chayef. Then says the Mishnah, let's say a sheni comes along, a second person comes along, and he adds an extra barrier against the animal, against the deer getting out of the house. Like let's say the threshold to the doorway has a little bit of length to it. So the first guy is standing in the threshold of the doorway, and the sheni stands behind him, also taking up the space of the doorway, such that the sheni is actually, you know, is providing another barrier against the deer getting out. Says the Mishnah, that's perfectly permissible. The sheni is allowed to reinforce the, you know, what the Rishon did, and it's not considered to be a problem. And then the Mishnah adds one last detail, says that even if the Rishon departs and he leaves his post, now the Sheni is the only one left behind, still the Sheni is acting perfectly permissibly. Because the Maisa, once again, since the Rishon was the one who trapped the deer, now that the Sheni is just maintaining what the Rishon already did, that's considered to be perfectly permissible. So just to get to Chazar one last time, again, so when the Rishon, we have this halacha, when the Rishon plugs up the doorway, the Rishon is going to be chayev. When the Sheni comes along and he goes behind the Rishon, he's acting perfectly permissibly, even when the Rishon departs. Even when the Rishon departs, the Sheni's allowed to stay there, and there's nothing wrong with what he's doing. Yeah, Yonah.
So if a non-Jew is the Rishon, then that's technically
something to do it. So Yonah's asking, interesting question. He's saying, what if a non-Jew would be the Rishon? And then, you know, we'll get the non-Jew to stand there, and the Sheni will go behind him. Could that be a way of doing this lechatchila? So I guess that will get into issues of Amir La'akum, meaning if you ask, if he did it on his own, it'd be perfectly permissible. So if the non-Jew would do it on his own, 100%, 100%. Right, 100%. Right, so Yonah's pointing out, if unintentionally the Agoya would be standing in the doorway, so there's no problem with the Sheni lechatchila going behind him. Interesting point. Fine. Okay. Comes along and tells us Yantiv on the Mishnayis, and he raises the following small question on this Mishnah. He says, the last halacha in the Mishnah was supposed to be, or is, that when the Rishon departs, the Sheni is still allowed to remain there. When the Rishon departs, there's nothing wrong with the Sheni staying there inside that threshold. That was the halacha in the Mishnah. So that was all the sort of the universe. Fine. Let's go by there. Fine. So that's the last halacha here in the Mishnah once again. That the fine. Just repeat it one last time because a bunch of guys walked in. So again, when the Sheni is blocking the doorway and the Rishon departs, so the Sheni is allowed to stay there. That's the last halacha here in the Mishnah. And Tosfentov raised the following question. He says, presumably, the case would seem to be simple case would be that when the Rishon departs, so he leaves the house. In order to leave the house, the Sheni has to step out to allow the Rishon to leave. But at that point in time, the doorway is exposed. The deer was inside this house. The Rishon and Sheni were blocking the doorway. When the Sheni departs in order to let the Rishon leave the house, at that juncture in time, the doorway is now open. It's exposed. The deer is able to get out. So in that situation, how can you tell me that the Sheni is allowed to now step forward and block the door? If the Sheni now steps forward and blocks the doorway, he's going to effectively be doing a brand new tzedah on this deer. That should be problematic. So that's the question of the Tosfos Yontif. He's saying that presumably the Mishnah is discussing a case when the Mishnah says that the Sheni can stay there after the Rishon departs. It's even in this setup where the Sheni steps back, the Rishon leaves the house. For a moment, the door is open, and now the Sheni steps forward. And apparently the Mishnah was telling me that this is permissible, but that makes no sense as a Tosfos Yontif. That can't be permissible, because if that would be the case, as soon as the Sheni steps forward, he's re-blocking the hole. That should be a problem of Blechet Sod. So what's going on in this Mishnah? That's the kasha of the Tosfos Yontif. Yeah, Yona.
Why is that the presumption?
Okay, fine. So Yona's asking why is that the presumption. So we're going to, he's not going to say it is a presumption, but other Achronim are going to say, that's going to be a machlokas right now. I'm assuming that was the kasha also. Fine. So there's a machlokas Achronim how to respond to this kasha of the Tosfos Yontif, namely the Tosfos Yontif himself versus the Magen Avraham. They had a debate how to deal with this question on this Mishnah. So let's start with the Shita of the Tosfos Yontif. Tosfos Yontif accepts the premise of his own question, and he says, you're right, that can't be the case in the Mishnah. Mishnah can't be discussed in this case where the Sheni steps back to let the Rishon depart, because there can't be any split second where the gap is exposed. So he says the case must be where the Rishon departs in a way, as Yonah was saying, where the Sheni maintains his post and is still blocking the hole. Like let's say in the case we described where the Rishon and Sheni are both in the threshold of the doorway, let's say the Rishon just enters the house. He departs by entering the house. So now as he goes into the house, the Sheni is the only one blocking the doorway, and the Sheni doesn't have to leave. He doesn't have to move. The gap is not exposed. That would be a simple situation where we can have this changing the guards in a way that there was never any exposure. That's the Tosfos Yontif's answer to his question, accepting the premise that, yeah, the case can't be where the Sheni steps back and the door is exposed. Otherwise, that would be a problem. Comes along the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham argues on the Tosfos Yontif. He feels that there's no need to make any ukimtas in the Mishnah. It could be the Mishnah is also discussing these other cases, but why limit it from this other simple situation? The Rishon Dafka has to leave by entering the house. Why can't we have a normal case where the Rishon leaves by exiting the house? The Rishon and Sheni are one in front of the other, and the Rishon exits the house. The Sheni steps back, and okay, the door's open for a moment, for a second while the Sheni steps back and the Rishon departs, the house, the doorway is open, the deer could get out. But nonetheless, as the Magen Avraham, there's no problem of tzad in this situation. When the Sheni then steps forward again, it's perfectly permissible. Why is it permissible? So he says something that's cryptic, which we'll have to try to figure out. He says that since the deer was already nitzod, it was already trapped, but you know, before everyone departed, when the Rishon and Sheni were there, plugging up the hole, the deer was trapped. Therefore, even though the gap became exposed, it's not considered to be a problem when the Sheni then recloses the gap. Those are the words of the Magen Avraham. He says it's permissible in this situation because even the doorway opened up, since it was kfar nitzod, the deer was already trapped. There's no problem when the door opens up and the Sheni steps back and steps forward, perfectly permissible. So we now have a machlokas how to interpret this Mishnah. What's the case with the Rishon departing? Tosfos Yontif is saying we cannot have a case where the gap was exposed for a moment, whereas the Magen Avraham is saying we can have this case where the gap is exposed. And the question is, what's the hesber in this machlokas? And particularly, what's the pshat in the shita of the Magen Avraham? The Magen Avraham is the real shita here in his explanation. He's saying this weird idea that when the Sheni steps back and the door is exposed, it's perfectly permissible. And the question is, what's the pshat? L'maisa, if the deer can get out, why is it not a new problem? Let's say that when the Sheni then steps back in front of the door and blocks the doorway again. That's the kasha in the sugya. Yeah, dope.
Is most of a real estate that he opens it up and then he retracts it? Or is he saying, like, humans are different than animals? If you give a human a little spot, he's going to slide his way through a crack just to go through. The animals are not going to do that. Animals' instincts are not to just shove their way in through animals.
So are you trying to ask that who said that the Sheni left enough of a space for the animal to get out?
Yeah.
You see, he definitely spells it out. Magen Avraham definitely spells out the cases. He feels that it's permissible to see all the applications of this for pet owners. But for now, he definitely feels that you could step back, the animal's able to get out, and it's permissible to step right in front.
So
Dov is bothered. This is the question on the sugya. What's on the Magen Avraham? 100%. That's the question. Now, fun. Now, just to make a disclaimer, we have to always just appreciate when there's a really schwer Magen Avraham, so then the answer is just going to be schwer. I know Gabriel's not going to like it, but we just got to try. Those not going to like it. Not to pick on you, just saying, we got to just try. So that's the status of those like it. Daniel, you had a question?
I'm not sure if you pointed this out already, but the assumption is here is that they're not both providing the the trapping. It's one individual is enough to
build. Yeah, so it's the threshold of the doorway is filled up by one person. The Rishon already fills up the threshold of the doorway. He had a little bit too much Carlos and Gabby's over the last few months. And he suffices to block the doorway. And then the Shane is just adding more Shmira. He's adding an extra level of Shmira by standing behind the Rishon. So it could be there's a Shchedesh in that, but the Mishnah is definitely saying the Shani, that itself is perfectly permissible. What? Okay. Yeah, Yona.
You say the fact that now that the deer is already trapped, the act is already trapped, it's now feels trapped. It's, you know, like that split second that the door is open, it's not gonna register that.
Okay. So Yona is suggesting that, you know, maybe once the door opens, since the animal is in a, you know, in a slave mentality here, when the door opens up, the animal's not going to leave. So the truth of the matter is, if Nevin saw something very similar to that, I'm going to say it in different terms, but I would take that, you know, I'm going to say it in fancy terms, but what you're saying is kind of the groundwork for what I'm going to say. But again, this is all just a disclaimer. We're explaining very Shver and Magid Avraham, so it's not going to be easy to say any of this stuff. Fine. So what's the pshat in the Magid Avraham? What's the point of contention in this machlokas? So in order to explain what's going on in the sugya in a compelling way, we're going to take a step back to deal with a preliminary issue for a few moments to develop a fundamental yesod in seda, which will put us in a condition, in position to try to explain this Magen Avraham. The issue that comes up is actually raised by Rav Shimshon Frol Hirsch. He raises the following question. We know that one of our lamentes malachos is the malach of hutzah. If you transfer something from one domain to another domain, that is the jurisdiction of Malachas Hotzah. Now, the Rishonim famously point out that there's something unique about Hotzah in contrast to the other 38 Malachos, which is that Hotzah is an inferior Malacha. It's a Malacha Gerua. It's a low-class Malacha. The other 38 are regular upstanding citizens. Hotzah is not an equal citizen. It's an inferior Malacha. Why is Hotzah an inferior Malacha? So the way Rishonim say, the way it's classically explained, is as follows. We know that the essence of the Isra Malacha is about productivity. It's about producing productive effects. By all the other Malachos, you're always producing some type of productive change in an object. All other Malachos are producing some productive change in an object. Like, for example, if you take the Malacha of Bishul, you take uncooked food, you cook it, you're creating a productive change in this object. Take the Malacha of Tochen. I have an object and I grind it up. So once again, I'm deconstructing this object for productive purposes. There's a change in the chayfetz. In contrast to that, with the malacha of hutzah, all you're doing is changing it from one location to another location. The object itself has not been changed. And so that's why it's considered to be an inferior malacha. There's a certain lack in the productivity. There's a much more peripheral effect. The chayfetz itself is not being changed. Its location is being changed. That's a more of a low-class effect. Therefore, it's a low-class malacha. That's the classic explanation behind hutzah being an inferior malacha. Comes along Rav Hirsch, and he raises the following question. He says, so why is Seda not also a low-class malacha? It's clear from the Rishonim, they specifically single out Hotzah as an inferior malacha, implying that all other 38, including Malachas Tzad, is a high-class malacha. But wait a second, says Rav Hirsch, listen. Just like by Hotzah, it's an inferior malacha because all you're doing is moving something from one place to another place. So by Tzad as well, all I'm doing is moving an animal from one place to another place. There's no change in the animal itself. I'm not changing anything in the guf ha-chevetz. All I'm doing is changing its location. Why is tzad considered to be a superior malacha? Why is it any different than hotzah? That's the kasha of Rav Hirsch. Dov, you want to say something?
I would say it's even less because you don't do it to the sexual object.
Dov is saying it's even less because you're not touching it, or what?
Yeah, you're saying the door, which...
Yes, it's even more indirect, Dov is saying. By hotzah, at least I'm touching the object and moving it, but by Sod, I'm just closing a door and the animal's trapped. It's extremely indirect. Okay, fine. So the question is, what's the pshat? So Rav Hirsch gives an answer. I'm going to say it over the way Rav Parnas said it. They're very similar, the two sides of the same coin, but I'm just going to express it the way that Rav Parnas said it. The way Rav Parnas answered this question was as follows. He said that what we're going to have to say is that while it is true that when you trap an animal, there's no physical change that's taking place in the object, the trapping of an animal isn't causing any physical change in the animal, but there still is a certain change that is occurring to the animal, to the chevta itself, in the sense that you're changing its state, you're changing its status. It had the status of being a free animal, and now has the status of being a trapped animal. So there's a change in status. So although, again, once again, there's no physical change, but its status has changed from being a free animal to what we call a Shem Nitzod. It has the status of being a Nitzod. That is a certain effect on the chafetz itself, and that's apparently sufficient to call it a full-fledged malacha. This is in contrast to Hotzah, when I move an object from one domain to another domain, aside from the fact that there's no physical change in the object, there's not even a status change. State hasn't changed. All I've changed is its geography. I've changed its location. That's still considered to be an inferior malacha. So that was the way Rav Parnas expressed the refershes yesod to answer this question, where we're coming up with this chiddush that there's a concept of a shem nitzod, that when you trap an animal, you're giving it a status of being a trapped animal. That's the chiddush we're saying in order to explain why there is a change in the chifetz, why it is an upper class malacha. Yeah, Daniel, you had a question?
Yeah, I'm forgetting which Rishon we quoted it, but wouldn't that lend credence more to the tzad that we said about tzad that it
control?
It's more of, yeah.
It's exactly what Hirsch says. He says that exactly, 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're referencing the Olah Chakir. Hirsch uses the control side. He feels that helps answer this question. I just don't want to overburden it. I don't want to overburden the chaver by getting back to the chakir again, but Anachnami, that's a very good point. It's a fair share of Hirsch. Okay. Yeah, well, no, stat, I mean, it's state. It's from being a free to being trapped. Its state has changed. Its status has changed.
I could easily argue that location is more
significant. You want to characterize an object by its location? Okay, this is going to get very philosophical. Yeah, what's more important, freedom or location, you know? Okay, fine. So we're working at a puzzle here, you know, like we have to make it work. Yeah. Okay, fine. So what we're bringing out of Rav Hirsch's Yesod is that there's a concept of a Shem Nitzod, that when you trap a creature, it gets a status of being a trapped creature. Now, based on that Yesod, we're not going to come back to the Magen Avraham and the Tosfos Yontif and just give a shot at trying to answer up the question of the Magen Avraham. We have this Machlokas again, when the Rishon departs, can the case be where the Rishon exits the house, the Sheni steps back, and the gap opens up, or perhaps that's a problem of Malaches Tzad. The Tosfos Yontif says that it is a problem of tzad if the sheni steps back and steps forward. Magen Avraham is saying that it's permissible. What's the point of contention in this machlokas? So the issue is going to be as follows. Now that we've been mechadish this idea that when you trap an animal, it gets the status of being a trapped animal, the question becomes, when does the animal lose that status? What does it take for an animal to lose the shem nitzod? That's the real question that has to be asked. So that's going to be the machlokas between Tosfos Yontif versus the Magen Avraham. Starting the sheet of the Tosfos Yontif, Tosfos Yontif is going to hold, quite reasonably, that as soon as the animal is unconstricted, as soon as you remove the trap, so it's free to go, it loses its status of being a nitzod. When the Rishon and Sheni plugged up the hole, the animal had a status of being trapped. If they both leave and the hole is exposed, since it's now unconstricted, it's free to go. At that point, it loses the status of being a nitzod. It's no longer trapped. If a Sheni would now step forward and re-plug up the hole, he's retrapping a free creature, that would be a problem of Malaches Tzad. So that's the explanation behind the Tosfos Yontif. It's really quite pashut. This is what we'd all expect. As soon as the hole is opened up, it's unconstricted. That's when it loses its status of being trapped. When if you would now re-plug up the hole, you're doing a brand new tzeda, that would be a problem. What's the pshat in the Magen Avraham? So it would seem to be as follows. It's along the lines of Yonah, just reframing it in different terms. Magen Avraham seems to be holding as follows. That when you trap a creature and you give it a Shem Nitzod, it doesn't lose its status of being trapped until it is released. The animal has to be set free and released for it to lose its status of being trapped. So in this situation where the deer is in the house and the Rishon Sheni plug up the hole, it now has a status of being a Nitzod. It only loses that status when it's released. When you release the deer, then it loses that status. But if you don't release the deer, even if the gap is exposed and it could get out, it doesn't lose its status of being a nitzod. That's going to be the shita of the Magen Avraham. So when the Rishon and Sheni step back and the gap is exposed, although the animal could get out, since the maisa has not been released yet, has not been set free, it still has the status of a nitzod. When the Sheni then steps forward and replugs up the hole, he's not considered to be trapping a free animal. He's trapping a trapped animal. It's not going to be a problem. Now, it could be very well connected to what Yonah was saying. Just, you know, Yonah could be saying a deeper pshat that why is it that you have to release the animal? Because when the animal is in the house, it still has this, you know, slave mentality, something along those lines. You could say something like that. Or Nevinsol has this line of a kvar nirgash. Already felt this say this. So you need to circumvent, you know, it's a habituation to being trapped. That could be a deeper pshat, but on a simple level, what he seems to be saying is that since once it's trapped until it's released, it's still called a trapped animal. So it doesn't matter if the hole was open and the hole was closed. That's the that seems to be the hazard in this machlokas, so Siyamta versus Magnavram, yeah. Please, please. 100%. 100%. Wait to hear the coolest. So just to repeat, Ethan was asking that according to the Magen Avram, there should be many coolas that would come out of the Magen Avram, the way we're expressing it. And a chanami.
You don't have to say that much. I think it's like overstretching.
Okay, so how do you want to say? How do you want to say it? Meaning, how do you want to? Ethan feels that we're taking the Magen Avram too far.
If you plan to trap it in a millisecond or a few seconds later, the Shani wants to go back right away. It's not that.
I mean, according to what I'm saying, it will come out that even if the Shani takes a coffee break, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Eitan wants to say.
Right.
And Hanami. So it will come out according to the way we're explaining it. Even if the Shani leaves, it will be perfectly permissible. He can come back the next day. As long as the deer doesn't leave, it would be permissible. So and Hanami, that's what will come out. Yeah. Ben. Okay, so. Okay, so Ben's arguing on Yonah then. Ben's saying, what if this takes place in a split second? In which case, we don't have this opportunity for what Ben is asking is. There's a brawl breaking out on the fourth floor here. Okay, sounds like me and Ben versus Yonah and Eitan here. Fun. Okay, let's continue on. It's Gishmak Machlokes. I hear the Hagen Maskan here. Fine, but let's continue on. Now, the Biur Halacha points out a practical application of this machlokas. It's a very practical, somewhat practical application for this machlokas in terms of pet owners. The halacha is that if you own a pet on Shabbos, so the rule is that if the pet is so subservient that as soon as the owner exerts its control over the pet, it will become subdued, so then there's no issue of malachas tzad. If you have whatever the pet may be, a dog, let's say, and it's so subservient to the point that as soon as you exert your control, it'll become subdued immediately. There's no issue of malachas tzad. That's the halacha. Chayadam, Nishabur brings down the chayadam, who says this kula. So if you acquire a pet and it reaches this type of subservience to its owner, it's permissible. The big issue becomes a newly acquired pet. A newly acquired pet can often take time to get used to its owner. And so that first Shabbos or two, where you have a newly acquired pet, it doesn't have this relationship of being so subservient to its owner, there's a real issue of maleches tzad. So the Biur Halacha brings up the following situation. Let's say a person acquires a brand new pet bird and you put the bird into a cage. And let's say a person now opens the door to the cage on Shabbos. Can he reclose the door? Imagine a person acquired a brand new pet bird. It's not subservient to its owner. It could be birds are never subservient, in which case this is a perpetual problem. But assuming that they would become subservient, it's certainly a problem the first Shabbos or two. And a person puts the bird into a cage. He opens the door to feed the bird, let's say. And now the door has been exposed. The door has been opened. The gap is exposed. Can he reclose that door? Or imagine you have a dog in a house, right? And let's assume the house is you're in a small apartment. And you open the front door. Now the door's just been opened, so now the dog can get out. It's a newly acquired dog, which is not subservient yet to its owner. Can you reclose the front door to your house on that first Shabbos that you just bought this brand new puppy? So says the Biur Halacha, that would depend on Tosas Yom Tov versus Magen Avraham. According to Tosas Yom Tov, it would be prohibited to close that front door. We'll have to figure out how to get the shul on Shabbos. It would be usher to reclose the door to your bird cage, and unfortunately, that bird's going to be flying around. Whereas according to the Magen Avraham, it will be permissible. And according to my pshat, the Magen Avraham, it will come out that you can close it whenever you want, as long as the bird or the dog doesn't actually leave the house, doesn't leave the cage, it would be permissible to reclose the cage and reclose the door, because until the bird or the dog is released, it will be permissible. There's no problem of tzad in reclosing it. So that's the major practical application of this machlokes. Anytime you have a newly acquired pet and it's in any confined area, a confined apartment, a confined cage, if the door becomes open, can you reclose it on Shabbos? Yeah, Ben. I hear the question. Ben is asking, according to the Magen Avraham, why did the Mishnah say the cases where the Rishon is still there, and then the Sheni, while the Rishon is still there, the Sheni comes along? Why can't the case even be where the Rishon departs before the Sheni even shows up? That's the question that Ben is asking on the Mishnah. The Mishnah's case was the Rishon is there, the Sheni goes there, and then the Rishon departs. Why not say better? Why not say the cases where the Rishon is there, the Rishon departs, and then the Sheni shows up? That's the question that Ben is asking on the Magen Avraham, right? So if you look at the Mahachasis HaShakal there, he points out in some Pshatim in the Ran that the Mishnah meant to teach us a Chiddush. It wanted to teach us a Chiddush that when the Rishon is there and the Sheni comes along, he's not Chayiv. You could have had a Havamina, but since the Sheni is reinforcing the Shmira, maybe the Sheni should have been Chayiv in that situation. When the Rishon plugs up the door, and then the Sheni also goes into the threshold, he's adding more Shmira there. You could have had a Havamina there. That's also subject to Malachas Tzad. Kamashmal, that you're not Chayiv in that situation. So in Achnam, according to the Magen Avraham, you could have said the case that Ben was just describing, but the Mishnah would have had to be teaching us this Chiddush because it wanted to teach us a Chiddush, so you're not Chayiv for being Mosef at Seda.
When the guy actually leaves,
okay.
The
Okay. Nobody doesn't like my shot. Okay. I'm going to respond to your question in one second. Danielle.
Wait, but that wouldn't be a Chiddush, right? Because if two people are engaging in one Malacha and they're part and parcel of the Malacha,
wouldn't that... Okay.
That's why I asked earlier about what the Metzius of the case was, if the one person is the one doing Malacha.
Yeah, so Danielle's asking, why is it not Shnayim Sha'asu? So the Halacha, okay, fine. It's a fair question, but what I just said is in the Machlokes the Shekel and the Ran. So that question has to be addressed. Yeah, no. So that Danielle's asking, what was my? I'm saying a half a minute. Yeah. So okay, Dov is agreeing with Danielle. Okay, fine. 100%. It's 100%. Okay. So bottom line is, so what's my response to Dov? Dov does not like this problem. I'm gonna run. So the Bir Lacha says that we pass on Tosas Yontif because all, if Kim Rov, if not Kimat, all Achronim passing against the Magen Avraham. So that's my response. En Achanami. It's a very, very, very difficult Magen Avraham. It is not acceptable halacha. We pass on Tosas Yontif. We are Machmir. What should a pet owner do then? If you acquire a new pet parakeet, tomorrow, right before Shabbos, and now it's in a cage. So how do you feed your pet bird? You know, if you want to open the cage door, you have a problem. So what's the solution? Right, so the Shmir Shabbos Kocha says, what you have to do is you have to open it in a way where you're never exposing enough of a gap for the bird to get out. Let's say you keep your hands, you know, while you open it with one hand, you keep your other hand there by the door, and as you open the door, your left hand, let's say, your right hand's opening the door, your left hand is there covering the gap such that the bird can never get out. You'd have to be careful to never open the door in a way where the bird could get out. Otherwise, there's a major problem. You would not be able to close the cage door. So that's the solution. And then the Shmir Shabbos Kilchus says that farmers are highly encouraged to have double doors in their barns, to have a double door system so that they can enter the outer door, close the outer door, and then enter the inner door. So that's the real ideal solution to this problem, says the Shmir Shabbos. Fine. So with that, we've concluded part one of today's shiur, Machlokes Tosas Yontif versus Magen Avraham, on this interesting situation. If you have an animal that's trapped and then the gap becomes exposed, is it permissible to reclose up that gap? Machlokes Tosas Yontif Magen Avraham. We tried giving a little bit of a hesber, which Eitan didn't like. Totally accept the kasha, but that seems to be the analysis. And the nafkamina, the application is with newly acquired pets. Yes, does you have a question?
Yeah. Here.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if would this be the same machlokas if the animal has no idea that you open the door? Like if you're in
our house,
you want to go to shul and it's in the living room.
Okay. So Yossus is asking the following question. let's say you have a dog. Let's say you're living in a small apartment and you have, again, this newly acquired dog, which is subject to malachas tzad. So can you open the door when the animal's not looking? Would it be permissible to open the door when the animal's not looking or not? So that's the kasha Yassas is asking. Shlomo Zalman was masubik about this shayla. He raises the Shomer Shabbos quotes of Shlomo Zalman having a suffix on this issue. Would that be a viable solution? And there doesn't seem to be a clear answer, but that's a very interesting question. So 100%, that's a very interesting solution. What Shlomo Zalman is willing to be makel on is if the dog is sleeping. If the dog is sleeping, so then he'll let you go to shul. What if he's in another room? So, okay, so that gets into the answer. Is he able to get out in time? You're saying, what if he can't get out in time?
No, he could.
He could get out in time? So if the animal could get out, so...
The owner could get out without the dog noticing.
That's Yossi's question. Yossi's asking, just let me open the door when the dog's not looking. So in a chanami. If he can't get out, it might be permissible. In a chanami. If it's all the way in the other room and it can't get out, it could be it's permissible. Okay. We're gonna go pet shopping tomorrow now that we know the halachas of pets. Okay, fine. Shmack, good. Fine. So that was all part one of today's shiur. So let's move over now to part two. Wow, it's getting late. Okay, so let's just do this a little quickly. The Gemara on Kufav on base brings a brisa that discusses the following issue. What's the halacha trapping sirin, which are hornets, or yatushin, which are mosquitoes? Trapping hornets and mosquitoes on Shabbos. Reb Meir says that you're chayiv. This is a full-fledged manifestation of malachas tzad, whereas the chachamim say that you're potter. There's no violation midaraisa of tzad in this situation. Why are you put in this situation? According to the Chachamim, you're trapping these creatures. So here's where we get introduced to the major qualification to Malachas Tzad of Ein Bamino Nitzod. That say the Chachamim, Malachas Tzad only applies midaraisa to a creature that is typically hunted. If you have a creature that's typically hunted, so it's called Bamino Nitzod, its species is hunted, that's subject to Tzad midaraisa. But if you have a creature that's Ein Bamino Nitzod, that's not typically hunted, so that is not going to be subject to tzad midaraisa. It is only going to be aser midarabanan. That's the major kula of the chachamim, we paskan like. And so when it comes to mosquitoes and hornets, since these species are not typically hunted, they're ein bimino nitzod, it's min, is not nitzod, there's no problem of tzad midaraisa. It's only a problem midarabanan. That's the qualification to malachas tzad. Now I put in the Maram Komas, Machlokas Rashi versus Tosfos, as to how to understand the nature of this limitation, but just because of the shortness of time, I'm going to emphasize the sheet of Tosos because that's how we paskin. Tosos and Rabbi Sharam hold that this is a brand new tour to Malachas Tzeda. There's a new exception to the rule that trapping a creature that's in Bamino Nitzot is excluded from Tzad. And a simple off-the-cuff explanation would be that it's not domed to the Mishkan. And in the Mishkan, the act of Tzeda involved trapping creatures that were typically hunted. So that characterizes the Malacha. It only applies to creatures that are normally hunted. It doesn't apply to creatures that are not normally hunted. Fine. So now, this heter has a fascinating application in the tshuva of the Tzitz Eliezer. So I just wanted to spend a few minutes now discussing an interesting shayla that was posed to Tzitz Eliezer, and this will be our ending to Malachas Tzad. The shayla Tzitz Eliezer was posed is as follows. I'm gonna say it over the way he was asked the shayla. I think it's going to be a little distasteful to a lot of us, but we could try to rephrase it in a way where it will not be as distasteful. The question was like this. In his society, apparently, or somewhere, it was the norm for young couples on Shabbos afternoon to want to go on a walk to visit some friends, let's say, on Shabbos, and they had young children. So apparently, it was normal to leave the children behind and to go visit their friends. Problem is that if you're leaving young children unattended, maybe they're going to run out of the house. So they would lock the door to make sure that their kids wouldn't run out of the house and go visit their friends. That was the shayla posed, that was the background of the shayla posed to Tzitz Eliezer. And the question they asked was, is there a violation of Malachas Tzad? That, listen, they're trapping their kids in the house. Is that a problem of Malachas Tzad? They're not asking about parenting. They're not asking about like good conduct. The question was Malachas Tzad. And he doesn't respond on the parenting issues. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what the society was. Maybe it was before like they had technology, so there's no like nothing unsafe in the house, or it was very, they were dirt poor, let's say. So like there's nothing in the house. I don't know what the situation. That was the shaila that was posed to Tzitz Eliezer. If we want to rephrase the shaila in a way it's a little more tasteful, so we could say that you have a child, and for whatever, for the goodness of the child, it's important to lock him in a room for a moment for whatever reason, there's an emergency, and he has to be put into a room for a few minutes. You want to put a kid into timeout, you know, and he's having a tantrum. What are the cases? We can come up with a case where it's more, you know, socially acceptable to lock a kid in a room. And the question becomes, is there an issue of malaches tzad? That was the question that was posed to the Tzitz Eliezer. So Tzitz Eliezer says that he's going to try and build two arguments to permit locking the kid in the room. The first argument is as follows. He raises the following question. Does malaches tzad apply to a human being? We know that malaches tzad applies to bali chaim, to creatures. Creatures with life force are subject to malaches tzad. Applies to insects. It applies to animals. Does it apply to human beings? That's the question. The first question we have to ask in tackling this shaila of locking a kid in the room on Shabbos. So he says like this. He wants to bring a raya to decide this shaila from a halacha brought down in the Ramah in Shin Lamed Tes. There's a fascinating halacha in the Ramah in Shin Lamed Tes, which he wants to use to make a diak in that halacha on this issue of whether tzedah applies to human beings. The Ramah brings down a Shibolei Leket, who brings down the following shaila that was posed to Rav Shvi Ragon. Someone once asked Rav Shvi Ragon the following question. Let's say there's a person who committed an avera and he's supposed to be punished. He needs to be subject to an onish. But the problem is we did not subject him to the onish before Shabbos, and now Shabbos has arisen. The question becomes, is it permissible to put him in jail and lock him up in order that he doesn't escape, so he doesn't run away? So then after Shabbos, we can subject him to the onish that he's supposed to get. That was the question that was posed to Rav Shvi Ragon. So Rav Shvi Ragon gave the following answer. He said that it is prohibited to put a person in jail on Shabbos. In this situation, you cannot trap this person on Shabbos to put him in jail, because there's an Isser Derabanan to be done a din on Shabbos. There's a Mishnah and Beitza that says you cannot adjudicate a din Torah on Shabbos. And putting someone in prison is carrying out an act of Beis Din that is also to do on Shabbos, because the Isser Derabanan of adjudicating a din Torah. So Rav Shvi Ragon says you have to not lock him up. And if he runs away, it's not our fault. Lo aleinu. It's not our fault. We're following the halacha, and there's nothing more we can do about it. That was the halacha. That was the psak halacha of Shvi Ragon. And the Ramah brings us down the halacha. Ramah brings down the halacha in Shin Lamed Tes, ein danin. And so you cannot put someone into a Beis HaSohar on Shabbos. You cannot trap somebody. You can't, imprison somebody on Shabbos. That's what the Ramah brings down the halacha. Comes along Tzitz Eliezer, and he makes the following diak. He says, listen, the Ramah, Shvi Ragon, they're all telling us that you can't put someone in prison on Shabbos. Why? Because of a technicality that it's carrying out a Maisa Beis Din, that it's adjudicating a din, and you can't adjudicate a din on Shabbos. As it's Tzitz Eliezer, why not say something more basic? Why not say you can't put someone into prison because of Malach Tzad? If Malach Tzad applies to human beings, why not tell me that you can't put someone in jail because of Malach Tzad? That's the diak of the Tzitz Eliezer. And the truth of the matter is, the diak, there's an even more profound diak that can be made. Because the halacha is, the Mishnah Berurah brings down from Rukiv Eger, that there is one scenario where it's perfectly mutter l'chachila to put someone in jail on Shabbos. Says Rukiv Eger, if there's a husband, Rachman al-Itzlan, who wants to run away from his wife and to make her an aguna, it is permissible to put him into jail. We waive the Isser Derabanan, and you could put the husband into jail on Shabbos to make sure that he doesn't make his wife into an aguna. So in this situation, we see explicitly that when the Isser of being done a din doesn't apply, when we waive the Isser Derabanan of adjudicating a din Torah, we're willing to put a person in jail. But once again, if Malaches Tzad applies midaraisa, we would not be able to permit putting a person in jail, even if there's a very extenuating circumstance. This is not the kind of thing we'd be able to permit. So says it to Eliezer, we see from here, Tzad does not apply to human beings. It must be that Tzad only applies to animals. It doesn't apply to human beings. Why doesn't Malaches Tzad apply to human beings? Says it to Eliezer, based on our qualification. Our qualification that we're discussing right now is Ein Bemino Nitzo. Malaches Tzad only applies to creatures that are typically hunted. It doesn't apply to creatures that are not typically hunted. So since a human being says that the tzitzil yezer is not typically hunted, it's not a species that is typically trapped, therefore is excluded from melaches tzad. That is why there's no problem of melaches tzad on a human being. So it's perfectly permissible from a tzad perspective to put someone into jail or to trap a human being. Why is it not aser derabanan? So Dov is asking, but let there be an aser derabanan. So this will go back to the svara we discussed last week, that Chazal aser things derabanan when they could be subject to a deraisa. So, you know, from animal to animal, if we permit trapping, a mosquito, let's say, you might come to trap other insects that are b'minor nitzod. So therefore, let's say honeybee, you know, might be a b'minor nitzod. So if I can trap a mosquito, I might trap a honeybee. So therefore, Chazal aser derabanan trapping mosquitoes. But if a human being is never ever going to be subject to melaches tzad midaraisa, so Chazal shouldn't even need to aser it midarabanan. So it would be perfectly permissible to trap a human being. I'm not recommending this, but in terms of melaches tzad, it would be perfectly permissible to trap a human being. So that's all the first arguments of the tzitzel yezer for why it should be permissible to lock a child in a house on Shabbos, because tzedah doesn't apply to human beings. He says the one exception to the rule might be, it could be that an evik kanani maybe will be subject to melaches tzad. That's what the tzitzel yezer says, that it could be an evik kanani, or I think he says like a spoils of war, like if there's a melchama and there, you trap someone in spoils of war, so you trap other people in a war, so maybe that, in a kanani, that's, they're typically hunted, he says. But normal human beings are not subject to melaches tzad. Yeah, so evit every also, maybe in a kanani. So fine, so that's what he says. Then the tzitzel yezer comes up with a second argument to permit trapping kids on Shabbos. And he says, and this is his main point. He says that this is even more compelling than the first point. First point is true. This is even more compelling to the tzitzel yezer. And this goes back to the pet halacha. The halacha, we pointed out before, was that if you have a pet that is so subservient that as soon as you exert your control over it, it immediately becomes subordinate to the owner, that's excluded from melaches tzad. That was the halach we saw before, which is the Mishnah Berurah in the name of the Chayi Adam. Says it to Eliezer that Kal v'chomer, a kid, a child, fits into this category. He hasn't seen my kids, right? But typically, okay. But it says it to Eliezer that a kid, you know, is subservient to his parents, as, you know, they certainly fit into this category. You know, that Mazonas Alecha, he says that, you know, they're telling their parents they need to be fed by their parents. They're subservient to their parents. And so kids in particular are excluded from melaches tzad because of the heter of pets. Now that aspect of being animals might be true to some children, but the other halacha of subservience, maybe not. Fine. So that was the interesting shaila of the tzitzel yezer. And with that, we've concluded melaches tzeda. So just to quickly chazer, part one of today's show, we had the machlokas of Sasyanta versus Magen Avraham. If you have an animal that was trapped and you open the door, can you close the door again? So Zyantav says you cannot. Magen Avraham says that you can. And that had application to a newly acquired pet. If it's in a cage or a dog is in a small apartment and you open the front door, you open the cage, can you close it again? So lehalacha or machmer, you cannot close the cage and a person has to be careful in that type of situation. Part two of today's share, we had the qualification of im b'minor nitzod. If an animal is not typically hunted, is excluded from melaches tzad. And we saw the interesting application of this halacha when it comes to tzedah ba'adam. What's the halacha of trapping a kid in a room on Shabbos? So tzitzel yezer has two reasons why he thinks it's permissible. Reason number one is that people are excluded from melaches tzad because they're im b'minor nitzod, they're not typically hunted. And he proves this from the halacha of putting a person in prison on Shabbos. You're allowed to trap a husband, not make his wife an aguna. And even a regular person you can't put into prison for technical reasons. So we see people are excluded from tzedah. And his second reason why he thinks it's permissible is that a kid is no different than a pet. A subordinate pet is excluded from tzad. So too a kid is subordinate to its parents, his parents. So have a wonderful Shabbos. And I guess I'll see everyone in 3 weeks. Daniel, you had a question?
Yeah, I mean, I think this goes back. We touched upon this when we last talked about inadvertently trapping flies in a box.
Yeah.
But would this not fall in the category of Yitushim or other things that aren't generally caught?
Okay, so the Riffa says that exact point. The Riffa says that apparently the issue of trapping flies in a box was an issue of the Rabbanim, 100%. Because of this exact point. 100%.
But why not say Ein B'Minor Nitzod?
Riffa spells it out. Riffa says it's Ein B'Minor Nitzod, so it's only the Rabbanim, 100%.
So then according to how did this Tzitzel Yezer, wouldn't that also be the Rabbanim?
No, okay, so that was Dov's question. Dov was asking, so why is it not also the Rabbanim to trap a human being? So the point seems to be that since a human being can never be subject to Tzad Midaraisa, therefore, Chazal wouldn't bother answering it mid the Rabbanan. That's what he seems to be saying. That like creatures and insects, you know, you can, if you could trap insect A, you might end up trapping insect B. So there's a slippery slope. But by human beings, since they're typically totally excluded from Lachat Sad, there's no issue at all. They didn't ask for him in the Rabban.
Yeah.
I have a wonderful Shabbos.
You too.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.
You too. Shabbos.
Good to see you. It's great to see you. Thank you.